This is lifemint.com and you're listening to the Mint Editors Podcast with me, Nandita Mathur, and Mint's editor, R. Sukumar. First, today we'll discuss Bihar, how political equations are changing there. The Mahagathbandhan has split up and he's joined hands with the BJP-led NDA. So what does this mean?
I think it's interesting. In some ways, what we are seeing is complete acceptance of the BJP's dominance, not just the Hindi belt, because if you look at it, they're now either directly or through an alliance in power in 18 states.
Right.
Got a tremendous footprint across the country, including Northeast India, where they didn't have any presence previously. So I think it has to be seen primarily from that perspective. BJP is, again, directly or through an alliance in power in the two most populous states in the country, which is Uttar Pradesh and Bihar. These two states together send 120 people to the Lok Sabha.
Right.
So next parliamentary elections, it's a huge edge for them. But I think part of it also needs to be seen from Nitish Kumar's side. I think there's been some talk of, he himself, of course, says he finally listened to his inner voice and decided to move because his partner was corrupt.
Right.
But he knew the partner was corrupt before he tied up with them. And then he knew what the compulsions would be.
Right.
So I think he's looking at it from a very, very opportunistic filter.
Mm.
It is a step back for him. And we'll come to it in a bit. But opportunistic filter because his partner, the Rashtriya Janata Dal, Lalu Prasad, is the dominant partner. It was a surprise to many people when they allowed Nitish to be the chief minister, but that could also have been because of the relative experience of Lalu Prasad's children. Children are now older, clearly, at least 3 years older. And I think Nitish sort of saw the writing on the wall and decided this was time to break. But to do that, I think he may have had to subsume his own ego. Because in some ways, here is a man who once saw himself as a potential rival to Narendra Modi. He's many people in this country, both on the in the political establishment as well as in the as well as analysts, as well as journalists, saw him, and in some cases you could say built him up as a counterfoil to Modi. And there was this buzz building up of how, it wasn't a very huge buzz, but it was this one of those undercurrents building up about 2019, how he would be a unified opposition candidate and things like that. Of course, long time to go, so many egos to manage, because especially the regional parties, it's very difficult. But all that is gone now, right? So I think he's accepted the fact that this is the dominant political disposition in this country right now. Makes sense for me, opportunistically at least, to ally with it. And it's like our newspaper, I think our profile called him the constant chief minister, right? I mean, because he's switched sides to be there and to stay relevant.
Right.
And I think he's damaged his own credentials a little bit because I don't think this is a partnership that was broken, the one that he broke, and the partnership that was made. I don't think either of these were prompted by high political or lofty political principles.
Right.
It was sheer opportunism. But for the BJP, it's a huge win because I think it establishes them completely. They're now dominant in the Hindi heartland, right? I mean, Uttar Pradesh, Uttarakhand, Rajasthan, then Madhya Pradesh, Bihar. So they've Chhattisgarh,
right.
Jharkhand. So they're right there. And I think that's really good for them.
So moving on, we focus on artificial intelligence and a lot of debate has been going around it. And this week it's resurfaced again because of the spat between Elon Musk and Zuckerberg. And Musk has this doomsday scenario, you know.
It's not a doomsday scenario, right? And it's not the first time Musk has said this. I must confess that I'm in Musk's camp. And that's not because I'm this big science fiction buff. I am. But I am in Musk's camp. And I think people should read this Oxford academic called Nick Bostrom, who's written on artificial intelligence. I think his book is called Superintelligence, if I'm not mistaken. I could be wrong.
Okay.
And Musk quotes him. And Musk is a huge believer in his books.
Mm.
And sentient machines, machines that can think, are definitely need to be managed, need to be controlled. So you need to be a little careful. So it's not something that can be allowed. And you know, I'm not speaking from the perspective of Terminator 2 and Skynet and artificial machines declaring war on humans and things like that. I just think it could be a lot more transactional in terms of how they work and everything else, which is why Isaac Asimov came up with those three laws of robotics, right? I mean, what a robot can do and can't do. And I think we are now verging near that singularity, right? I mean, as some people call it. And we are very careful as to what it means. Of course, there's this very, very left of center or right of center, whatever theory, that we are actually already living in a matrix created by the machines with various points of evidence.
Yeah.
One being Brexit, one being Trump selection.
Facebook supports it because their whole algorithm and everything, Google also is run by AI to a certain extent.
Sure. I mean, many of these virtual things are run by AI, but I think you still need to manage that. So I'm in the Musk camp. AI is good, but you need to be very clear as to what you're using it for and how it is being used, and there need to be certain principles. And I don't think we're not going to resolve this debate here, right?
No.
I mean, but I think there needs to be more talk about this. There needs to be more discussion. There needs to be more research. And there need to be some industry standards, some protocols as to what is allowed and what is not allowed.
So one needs to be careful about AI and its usage. And
We shouldn't talk about it simply because I think it will take an entire episode. Mm. But you saw what they did with CRISPR yesterday, right? I mean, which is this whole human gene editing. And it's another breakthrough, right? I mean, and you put all these in place. I think things are just moving far too fast and we need to sit down.
Right.
Put some protocols in place as to what these things will be used for.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not sure that all those things are getting done. And I think Musk's point was made from that perspective, as to say, like, hey, listen, let's not get too carried away about what AI can do, what AI should be allowed to do.
So moving on, there have been a spate of results announced for different companies, and we look at Facebook and Amazon, and Facebook has done enormously well. They've had a profit. The profit has risen by 70%. Mobile sales have grown by 50%, which is just testament to its user base. Amazon, on the other hand, has seen profit slumping to, you know, more than 70%. And one of the reasons it says is because it's investing in growing economies like India.
And video. Not so much video. India, right? In fact, there is a common thread between these two.
And
the common thread is simply video.
Yeah.
In Facebook's case, Facebook has a stranglehold over mobile advertising. Mobile advertising didn't slow. Growth slowed. And here also you're speaking about, I think it grew at 47%.
Right.
So 47%, you can't really, you know, you can't turn your nose up at 47%.
Yeah.
If something grows by 47%, I would think it's dashed good. I know people in established industries who think 7% is dashed good, right? I mean, if you're a traditional, huge, heavy equipment manufacturer or something. But Facebook is obviously, Zuckerberg's big bet is on video. It's something that most people are unclear on. Only he seems very clear about. Most analysts are unclear about what this means and everything else. That's their big play. But what are people betting on? They're betting on the fact that irrespective of whether growth slows or whatever else, this company will continue to have a stranglehold over mobile advertising.
Right.
And I think the results of the last few quarters have proved that.
Mm.
That there are two companies that have a stranglehold over all digital advertising, Google and Facebook.
True.
And when you split it and you look at it, when it comes to mobile advertising, Facebook is there. There are countless ad tech companies that have come and gone. Right in the face of this. So it's like a juggernaut when it comes to mobile advertising. And I think that's what people are betting on. They're probably also betting a little bit on the fact that WhatsApp will continue to do well. Facebook will do interesting things with messaging and this video thing. So that's that. In Amazon's case, video again, but different sort. They made huge investments in Prime.
Right.
They made huge investments in content. And they are seeing all this as driving more shoppers to them. They made huge investments in grocery. They see that as a pillar of growth. But this is a constant criticism of Amazon, right? I mean, that the company's expenses keep going up. And that's because of the nature of the business that it's happening in. And at some point in time, there will be a payback. And that's what Amazon also believes, right? And it's continuing to grow customers. And if you look at most of their operating expenses actually increase under various heads. And that clearly shows that they're investing across the board, which they have to, right? I mean, you can't ignore India.
Right.
I mean, they gave up on China, but you can't ignore India. They've made a huge play in Singapore, where they've gone up against Alibaba now, right? I mean, so you can't ignore these markets. You can't ignore the fact that you have a good grocery play, so you can take that and you can actually be a foil to Walmart or actually go up against Walmart in many markets. So you have to do those things. So it's one of those businesses where you need to keep making investments and then grow. But at some point in time, the thinking in Amazon is that there will be returns. But both of them were fascinating results.
Great. Moving on, Axis Bank has bought FreeCharge, which is a digital payment system, from Snapdeal. And it's interesting because it's a bank which is sort of tied up in this payment space and it has a first mover advantage. So,
why did they buy and why did they not do it themselves, right? I mean, that's the question. There are three reasons, right, typically why these acquisitions happen. One is the brand. FreeCharge is not a brand brand, right? I mean, sure, I think FreeCharge pre-Snapdeal acquisition might have been a stronger brand than it is right now, but it is still a reasonably strong brand. And of course, you can make out from the fact that the price at which Access bought it was very different from the price at which Snapdeal bought it.
Yeah.
I think Snapdeal bought it for $400 million and they bought it for $60 million or 400 crores. So huge difference. But I think different scenario, different environment, and even Snapdeal is in a very different place than it was at the time when it acquired FreeCharge. Back then, it could do no wrong. Right now it can do no right. From Access's perspective, clearly gives them beachhead in the entire payment space, which is exploding. And you look at what many of the companies here, including the market leader Paytm, have achieved. It's very significant. There is clearly significant disruption of traditional payments and banking spaces by some of these new fintech companies. And I have no idea what Access plans to do with this, because we'll have to wait and watch over the next 6 to 8 months to see how they're planning. But what they do have is now a platform that they can use to do that. So in some ways, they can disrupt themselves. Because if they're not going to do it, someone else is going to. So I think it's smart from that perspective. But a lot of it will also depend. It's good that Access is what they call a new private bank. So it doesn't have any of the old baggage of the legacy banking. But I'm hoping that they try and sustain their commitment to keep this separate, even as they integrate various parts of it. Because I think the DNA of a fintech company has to be a little different and all that. So you'll have to see how that goes.
So those were Sukumar's top stories for this week. Do let us know what you think. You can email us at feedback@livemint.com or follow us at LiveMint on Twitter and Mint on Facebook. Thank you for listening, and see you next Friday.